Hey, everybody, and welcome to Hashtag Afterlife. I'm your host, John Rosenfeld. Today, I will have a conversation with Mike Mussini, the guy who went from professional hockey player to working actor. And he will tell us about some of the life lessons he learned from hockey and how they informed his approach to all things creative. He's also a producer, career consultant, loving husband, father, and friend, and a kick-ass actor who really knows what it means to hustle and enjoy the grind. I left this conversation buzzing, and I hope you will too. Let's meet Mike. Mike Mussini.
Ah, yeah.
How great to sit down with you. You look good.
Well, yeah, so do you.
Well, thank you. We have known each other since 2006.
Yep.
We've worked on and off. I've worked on and off with not just you, but your wife,
yep.
Katrina Bajan.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
I got that right.
Yes, yeah.
Pronunciation.
Yeah.
I'm so excited to sit down because, like, your journey to this point in your life is what a road.
Zigzag. All over the place.
You started off as a hockey player.
Yep. Never acted a day in my life until I was, like, almost 30. But I started out as a hockey player. Went to Junior Olympic training camp in Lake Placid, New York. Went to San Jose Sharks training camp at 19 up in Brainerd, Minnesota. Then I played in the minor leagues. I went over to Germany. I played in the minor leagues in the U.S. And Canada. And Junior A, which was the best 20 and under age group. Mm-hmm. And then when I was about 24, I was playing over in Germany. Got all my teeth knocked through my bottom lip. And the trainer gave me a water bottle.
But that's also part of the gig, right?
Yeah. I mean, you kind of – I wasn't a fighter. I was a goal scorer, but when you play in the minor leagues, I didn't know this. I thought it was always like, oh, I could just play my game. No, the second you play in the minor leagues and you got like 10, 12,000 fans like stomping, and we played in Texas some games. So when you play, they want to just see action, goals, fights, whatever. So it's like, it's kind of like you're putting on a main event.
How old were you when you first put on skates?
Three.
Yeah. Three.
3 years old, yeah. My brothers are all 10, 12, and 15 years older. So they were already playing pond hockey. So I was kind of like, they were like, if you want to come with us, you got to learn how to skate. So I had to learn how to skate fast.
And did they skate professionally, your brothers?
Oh, my one brother almost made it. Rich, my next brother-in-law, almost made it. John played Division I hockey up in New Hampshire. And Bobby was just a fighter. He was a great hockey player, but he liked to mix it up a lot. So,
and so that you had that work ethic mirrored to you. So your brothers were out there doing it.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
And as a parent, your parents, that means that they had to drive you everywhere.
My one guy, I have a 7-year-old and a 4-year-old, and just my 7-year-old who's in hockey now and he loves it. Like, we're probably going to the Kings game tonight. He, even just driving him Saturdays and Sundays and then practices, and I'm like, oh my God, this is just one. Then the 4-year-old will start to play. I couldn't imagine having four sons that play hockey all over the place. I'm like, I didn't know the respect I didn't know back then.
Who was the one who was driving you around the most?
For me, it was my dad, but my mom and dad would split up if my brother Rich had a game in like Pennsylvania and I had a game in Boston. So, they would split up for the weekend. So
you were able to witness just how this took a full investment from everybody involved, yeah. Not just you, but your parents as well.
I didn't know this. At the time, you're kind of
taking it for granted.
You just think everything's about you. Yeah. You're like, well, I got a game in Boston. Why is everybody not coming to my game in Boston? And it's like, well, because they got games of their own in New Hampshire and Pennsylvania and South Jersey. So
then you were done with hockey.
It about 19. This attributes to what happened with why I work so hard as an actor. At 19, when I went to San Jose Sharks training camp in Brainerd, Minnesota, it was a rookie camp.
Okay.
So it was all their best players, and there were some Florida Panther players. There were some other rookies that were like going to go in, you know, that just went in the draft. And so they had like 60 guys.
Okay.
So there are all these draft picks that were there, all these rookies and draft picks. And I was just there for regular training camp to get ready for my season of mm-hmm. juniors. And they invited me to stay for the extra 2 weeks to go to this main event. And I was like one of the best in New Jersey at like 15. So I kind of, I don't want to say I hit cruise control, but I didn't work as hard as I should, 16 and 17.
Okay.
And at this training camp is when life hit me in the face. I was like, there's Russians, Czechoslovakians, people, kids from all over the world competing for these spots.
Yeah.
And I was like, oh man, I had it. It's just, I also played, I was a scratch golfer. I played football, baseball. So like, I was well-rounded, but I went there and I was like, oh, these people are, they're playing for life. Like they're playing to like get out, or they're playing to like the Canadians. It's like, this is their life. There's no backup plan. This is all or nothing. And I'm like, so I remember.
How did that hit you?
Yeah, that's when I, after training camp, I think it was, and I played good. I played good. But it was like after day one or two, realizing that out of those 60, maybe three or four will play in the NHL. I was like, I was in the locker room. I remember this vividly. I'm in the locker room. Everyone left and I'm sitting there. I still think I had everything on and I'm just sitting there like, oh, man, those 2 years that I hit cruise control is when I actually should have been working harder, because now I see the level of competition and there's no way to catch up. Because it's, oh, we're all 19, all things created equal.
And you even kept playing for a few years after that, but with that secret.
With that secret.
You and I had the exact same experience. Mm. Not hockey, when I played baseball.
Yeah.
And my coach told me I was a huge disappointment in my junior year. Because when I started, I was the first person to have made like varsity in ninth. And I was just naturally talented. Yep. Did not work hard.
Yeah.
He shamed me. Then I decided to work hard.
Yeah.
I did well enough to where I made it to the LA City All-Star game.
Yeah.
And I remember in that game, I faced a pitcher that had been drafted in the top like 10 major league draft, who threw like close to 100.
Yeah.
I was so overwhelmed.
Yeah.
I hit the ball in a very unprofessional manner.
Yeah.
And the guy after me went up there confidently and smacked a home run that went about 420 feet. And he played the major leagues for 15 years.
Yeah. Yeah.
And but I will say that event that day, even though I continued to play for the first couple of years of college, I was like, I didn't put in the work.
100%.
But it helped me a lot after that to go, that's really what it requires.
Yes.
I love, that's what a story.
Yeah. And also realizing that you, the only thing I knew in life, I thought you went to high school for hockey. I thought you went to college for hockey. I didn't know. It was like a rude awakening. I knew nothing but hockey and golf. I was a scratch guy. I love golf. I was really good. I still am good at golf, but I don't play as much. But hockey was like if I was off the ice for a week and a half, I'd be like, oh my God, I lost stuff. Right. And I lost stuff. But then when I was like, I made select 16s and select 17s up in Lake Placid, New York. Mm-hmm. And I was like the best on the team my junior year. I didn't have that same like where I have to compete and I have to drive to be the best of the best, because I already kind of go on cruise control and score two goals a game. So I kind of slacked off. But then I realized when I went to this training camp, there was no internet back then. So you didn't have any like all these things hitting you with like barraging you. Oh, my internet might have been slowly around, but it wasn't like popular. So you didn't know what you were getting into until you got into it.
Right.
And then you're like, oh, wow. And I skated with NHL guys in the summer, in summer league, and they were good. But they were, and I hung with them all, and I was good on those teams. It was just when I realized only four people in this rookie camp, maybe eight, are going to make it to the NHL. Mm-hmm. So if I worked my face off, maybe by 27, I could get a few games, but no one's hiring. People are going to take a 19-year-old equal or even equal to you. If you're 27, it's very hard to make it to the NHL. So
you were able to have a macro view of just, okay.
What's a shocking macro view.
Of not just your talent level, but even of the odds and the business side of it.
Yeah.
And
it felt like the worst breakup.
Which does not, which is not in alignment with the decision to decide to commit to acting at the age of 30.
I didn't know.
That did not seem like the best of all the odds. You know what? Hey, let's get out of hockey where the odds are into acting.
Yes, yes, that's exactly it. Well, I didn't know how hard it was. I thought it was easy.
Oh boy, and you were up for a rude awakening.
I never even did a play. Like, you know, some kids did a play in grade school or high school, or I never even knew what sides were, a script was, or anything till I was late 20s, early 30s.
Well, let's talk about it. So I met you in 2006, and you were green green could be.
Yeah.
But you were also very charming. You know,
you didn't know how to use it, though. I didn't know how to use it.
You didn't know
material.
How to use it. There was a confidence.
Yeah.
But I do remember, like, you're like, I do remember an experience with you where you were really, there was like a frustration of like, why am I not getting this?
Yes,
like,
I'm working hard. Yes, yeah, yeah.
I'm working hard.
I thought you'd get it in like a couple weeks.
Right.
Yeah.
That's what Olivier did. Like, you know, he just took a 2-day seminar.
Yeah.
So I think, but so initially, and you met your wife in 2007.
Yeah. Yep.
But then when did you basically decide, you know what, I'm not this acting thing. I might not be able to pay my bills right now.
Yeah.
So then you segued into producing.
Yeah, I produced for about 6-7 years. How I did that, I'll just make this one real quick because this is more about acting. But after I was done with hockey, all my teeth were knocked through my bottom lip. I was playing in Germany. I came home on a Thanksgiving night. I remember my dad bragging about me. And I love my dad. My parents were awesome. They supported everything I did. But I remember them, my dad even telling a story. Yeah, he's playing over in Germany right now, doing the tour. Like you know, like bragging about me. And I'm like, oh, shit. I didn't tell anybody. And my nickname always from about 17 on was Hollywood. Like they all kind of, they said I played for the stands. Like I played to do good so that I could hang out with everybody after. And like I loved the camaraderie of hockey. I loved the showmanship of hockey. I was like, and I, even my act, my hockey style was more of an artist. I would like see the ice. I'd know where everyone is. So I heard him bragging about me and I'm like, oh, how am I going to break this to him? I'm not doing the tour right now. I'm back. It's Thanksgiving, which is very early in the season, meaning so my teeth got knocked through my lip and I was in the locker room in Germany and I heard all the 42-year-old guys who played in the NHL and now they were on their downturn talking about the next bar they're going to go to. And I was like, oh shit. I'm like, I'm 24 years old. All my friends are graduating college and I'm playing hockey in some burned out arena. We had 5,000 fans. So you're still signing autographs and stuff, but I'm like, I was 23 maybe. And I'm like, I'm in a burned out. It's Germany. Nobody spoke English. It's raining all the time. I'm like, huh. So I flew home and I was like, I'm going to Hollywood. My nickname's Hollywood. I'm freaking going to Hollywood. That's what I'm doing. So I go to Hollywood. So I said to my dad, he looks at me white as a ghost. Like, what are you doing home? Like, basically I'm just bragging about you to everybody here for Thanksgiving dinner. And I'm like, you know, I'm a movie star. And he's like, what? I go, yeah, you know, I'm going to go to Hollywood. I'm going to be a movie star. And he's like, oh, Jesus, this is – again, very supportive family. But when you go from the most competitive field to be a professional athlete at the highest level to then say you're going to be a movie star, and I've never done a stitch of acting in my entire life. He was like, okay, look. And then that night after dinner, he's like, I will let you do what you want to do. I'll give you a year, but you have to graduate college and get your economics and finance degree. Because I was already taking summer classes for that. Finish school, get your economics and finance degree. So if this thing doesn't work out, I can get you a job working on Wall Street because he knows I didn't like The Office, in more of an investor relations type of a thing. So I'm like, okay, cool. We'll agree on that. So I had 3 years left to graduate. That's why it was not until 29 that I was able to do this. And my brother lived in Newport Beach. So in the summers, I started to fly out to him and just try to get a commercial rep while I was out here and figure that thing out. So I had an economics background. And then that's how I had an economics and finance background. So when acting was, I was like, oh, this is longer than 2 weeks it takes to get this. Like you like might take 4 or 8 or maybe a year. I was like, let me just go back to what I know I can make money on, and it's economics and finance in the entertainment industry.
And that's when you started working for James Franco's company.
Yeah, I started with Automatic Entertainment and Archstone, which are international sales and distribution companies. So I learned how numbers work and how movies get financed, which is pretty cool to see behind the curtain. How movies get financed, who buys them for what amounts in different territories and parts of the world. So then I knew that game, so I started working there, doing a few features, doing a few films for them. Then I did my own feature. I was like, oh, I know how this works. Let me do my own. Got it into AMC theaters. We did it on like a $300,000 budget. Got it in, you know, worldwide distribution. Got it in 30 cinemas. Then Vince Jolivet, James Franco, and Art of Elysium, Jennifer Howell, pulled me on because they had all these films that they had that were just sitting there. Mm-hmm. And they're like, we can do something with these. And if we make money with these, we can put some of that money back into the charity because it's as like a donation. I'm like, oh, great. I know how to do that. So then I started working with all the movies they had. So that was, this is over, all of that was over about a 7-year period where that was my main focus, was film finance, distribution, sales, and producing.
Okay.
Yeah.
So you got that perspective of the industry.
Yeah.
And you were just crunching numbers. Figuring out how to get money from get money from Bolivia, whatever it might be.
And who's worth what and what territory. Like, totally against what my whole insides about being an actor. I'm like, oh, we're taking this one. You know, this is the actor that sells the most in, you know, this territory. So it was just reverse engineering.
Gave you again another new perspective, but mm-hmm. in all of this, yeah. and you and I were talking beforehand, it's the full giving all of your energies towards hockey,
yep.
recognizing that when you did not apply yourself, you fell behind.
Uh-huh.
Then go to school yep. again with the idea of just making sure that you're covered.
Yes,
you know, you're sitting there making sure. Okay, I have to be prepared to be a hyphenate.
Yeah.
Then okay, you get into that. You get into. You take that job, mm-hmm. you make good money. You mm-hmm. actually are able to create a life. You're married.
Yep. Well, right? No. We didn't get married till 14.
Oh, not till 14.
So
she dated for 7 years.
Yeah, we dated for
7 years.
Hey, I don't know. Dated for 7 strong years.
Yeah.
And then got married and then pulled the trigger.
Yeah, pulled the trigger.
Yeah. I would have gone 9, but Katrina was like, she was ready. She's like, all right, you know, we're going to have a family now. Let's be able to do this.
I'm going to quickly cut to where you are now. Like right now, you know, you can see Michael in High Desert,
yep.
and you just did Leverage. You work constantly.
Mm-hmm.
But back then, when your wife mm-hmm. got pregnant, that you're like, I have one chance to freaking do
100%.
This.
100%. Yeah. Through this time, I would still do commercials and guest stars and whatnot. Right. But I mean, it would be like one a year,
yeah.
maybe one every. I would do a bunch of commercials because that helped. Commercials were pretty easy. Yeah. A lot easier than they are now, I think. I don't know, but I don't do as many now. But back then it was like 3 a year. So it's like you get that plus you're producing. So you're making decent money.
Okay.
You're like, all right, cool. My heart wasn't totally in producing. I just knew I was good at it because right. no one wants to do that work. It's, mm-hmm. It's like the back office work. So it was about 2016. When I was like, okay, Katrina said she's pregnant. Maybe it was 15, 16. It was around Christmas time of 15, 16. Mm-hmm. She's like, you know, pregnant. So then I'm like, wow. It was the first time it was like, okay, this hit. Now I have got to. I wanted to be the player in the game.
Right.
The producing thing wasn't the dream I was chasing. I'm like, I want to. When I was even in high school and stuff, I'm like, how do I do that? Like, I would love to do that, but I'm like, I'm a hockey player, so I'm never going to do that. I'm never going to be on a TV screen. Who in New Jersey is ever on a TV screen? I'm like, right. never heard of it, never knew anybody, never anything. Never, even in the wildest dreams, was it ever possible.
Mm-hmm.
But since I'd done a couple little parts, I was like, I think it's like the blood in the water. I think if I work really, really hard and get good at who I am, I think I can market that and then grow as an actor outside of that. So let me get really, really good at what I can do the best as an actor and see if I can pop something that way. And then I'll grow as an actor as I go along and get more roles that kind of advance my career from there out. But I think I can be the best at being me, because I'm like, I don't think there are many me's in this town. And I was like, let me just, for 6 months, throw everything at it. I took every dollar. I don't want to say every dollar, but like, I know a lot of actors, and we all have to watch our money a little bit, because you know, you never know when it goes up or down. But I was like, I'm out. I'm going to give this everything I got, or I'm out. I got to do something else, because I'm having a baby. I'm having a family. I'm like, so if I'm going to do this, I don't ever want to regret. It's like that Matthew McConaughey statement. Like, you know, you're going to go all out, because then at least you can say, I did everything I could.
Right.
So I took everything I could and threw it. I got workout groups, got in all the classes around town, got in workout, took groups from those classes and formed like 4 or 5 or 6 people. So I just trained all the time, every day. I'm like, hey, anybody available? Anybody available? Anybody available? I would drive to different parts of town, running the same scene, different ways with people, so I didn't get locked, and be in class and be running stuff and even taping. And this is right when kind of tapes were coming out, taping and retaping and using my taper, my recorder, you know, for the other person's lines. I'm like, hey, if nobody can run stuff with me, I'll run it by myself. Got Rehearsal Pro, where whatever I did, I was like, I am just going to train to be the best at on-camera auditions. So I don't care about acting. I don't want to say that, because it is acting. I am where I am. I'm gonna come to terms with, this is where I am in the craft. I'm not gonna be like, I'm gonna be good when this happens. Not gonna look outside the box and be like, I wanna get as good as possible as I can now and light that lens up. I wanna light the lens up where like it feels like I'm watching a show or I'm watching this. And if I don't get the job, so be it. I had a great time. I just shot a little short film with my friend, whoever's behind running the camera.
Right.
So then I did that for like 6-8 months. And then I got this opportunity came up. It was a 2-episode co-star. And I turned it into a full season top of show recurring guest. John Singleton gave me a shot.
That was on Rebel.
On Rebel. And at the end of the season, I was like, this is mine. I was like, not only is this mine, I am going to bring so much to this where I'm going to get the job. I got the job, and I'm going to get on set and I'm going to light the lamp. I call it light the lamp. It's like scoring a goal. Light the lamp, light the lens up so much where, you know what? I got nothing to lose. I'm going to just have the best time with this. And at the end of the season, the writers and the creators said, your character was supposed to get killed in that next episode. You earned your full season top of show. I got like overscale, top of show, whole season. You earned that, because we could not write you out. So I was like, oh, wow. That was my first. John Singleton gave me my first, and he gave Danielle like a great shot. You know, it was a great role she had. But that was my first, wow, I can do this. I can carry multiple episodes, have an arc, go deep in places I need to have. And I'm like, I'm just the fullest version of myself.
I have a question. That requires a lot of emotional intelligence, because you're where you are, mm-hmm. you know, not having all of that data, you know, you don't have that much data.
No.
You don't have that much, you know, your tires are not that used at this point.
No, yeah.
And somehow you're having the awareness that you have to both accept where you are.
Yep.
That, like, look, you're like saying, I'm not going to be Philip Seymour Hoffman right now.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. But I can be really work hard at just figuring out how to operate truthfully.
Yes.
And to, as you said, mm-hmm. you know, what was that term? Brighten the lamp or
light the lamp. Light the lamp. Light the lamp. Yeah.
But what gave you that grounding? Who were your mentors at that time? Who were the people who were kind of saying, go for it.
It was that I didn't want to fail.
You didn't want to fail.
I didn't want to, what happened in hockey, where I knew I had potential. And I think this town is full of wasted potential, because I see some great actors. Because I tape some people, I see some great actors that come to me and they just didn't work on stuff. And they're wasting their potential. These roles could launch them. And instead they're just going over it. Like just lightly touching the surface. So I figured if I can dive deep, learn this dialogue, have it so ingrained into me, it was my own, right. Like it's like my own words. And I'm like, you know, child actors are good. and or there's people who have, you know, are on some movies like Into the Wild and stuff, and they weren't actors before, and they get awards. I'm like, so why can't I just totally ingrain these words and not and pretend I'm not an actor? I'm just living in this circumstances. So, but the hard work came from knowing those words and the points of view and who everybody was to such a place where I could just be. But that's the hard work. It was like I was working night and day, running stuff with like my friend Kyle in the Valley. And then I go to somebody else to run stuff. And the same scene, I'm like, I would be like three or four different places before I had an audition the next day for like Modern Family. I'd go to like three or four different houses. I'm like, God, it still doesn't feel like it's in me. Still feels like I'm like on a cliff. If
there is a recurring theme that we've had on this podcast, don't you, Hilly? I think there is, where it feels like the first podcast we had with John Beaver
You know, he's great, and he just booked that great role.
Brilliant. But he didn't go to his acting school.
Yeah,
I mean, obviously he took classes.
Yeah,
but a lot of it is learning by doing.
Yeah.
And learning to somewhat being self-taught, but and when he came to me, it just helped him really understand how to operate in this world and this universe, which he needed.
Yeah.
But the work ethic was there, and his curiosity. Yeah. And you know, there are a lot of wonderful actors who've never taken an acting class.
Mm-hmm.
They were just on set as children.
Yep.
You know, I mean, I don't know whether Jason Bateman has ever taken an acting class.
Yeah.
I don't think he has.
Yeah.
But I'd say he knows what he's doing.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and I think that there's this. It makes you have to think for yourself.
Mm-hmm.
And it makes you think, no one's coming to save you.
100%.
And no one's coming to save you. And one thing that is one of my pet peeves is when actors will come to class and I'll say, I want you to self-tape and I'll watch it.
Yeah.
And they'll show something that you would never submit to any human being.
Yeah.
And I'm like, they threw it together.
Yeah.
And it's such a missed opportunity to grow and to learn.
Yep.
Because if you can just watch frame by frame,
mm-hmm.
what story? Am I being honest? Am I being truthful? Yep. What's my connection? All of that. It's not about, I don't give a fuck about the result.
Yeah.
I give a fuck about the effort
mm-hmm.
and energy in 100%. Which you were investing
yep.
to whatever you are deciding to show people.
Yep.
You know?
Mm-hmm.
And I think, I remember for me, it was, like, you have to get excited by that frustration.
Yeah.
You have to get excited that your work is not living up to your ambition.
Yep.
Meaning, like, I'm turned on, just like in sports.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Do you remember
when you have to love the practice.
You have to love the practice. Yeah. Like, if you notice that something's wrong in baseball, that you're not able to, you know, hit, that you're pulling all mm-hmm. the time, that, you know, you're not hitting to the opposite field, then you go into the freaking batting cage and you take 1,000 cuts.
100%.
100%. And you are just practicing over and over and all of that repetition.
Yep.
So it sounds like for you, you were just begging the world right there, get me my reps in. Like you're driving 100%. To the Valley. You're driving to.
Yes, yes, yes. And it's 100% what you're saying is it is, I knew I hadn't done as much on camera work as everybody else. So I'm so like, if I can get really good at lighting that lens up.
Yeah.
If I can get, I'm going to make a mini, and I didn't do with theatrics because sometimes I have a tape recorder and I just have my own camera, but I'd walk into the camera for a close up. I like, look, and I have, and I'd walk back. I'm like, to help tell the story. Mm-hmm. If I'm saying something to somebody and it says I threaten them here, I'm like, why do I have to do threatening, angry or mad? Why can't I like whisper it in their ear? I'm like, I watch some of my favorite movies. I'm like, oh, wow, how can I do that? I watched a lot of old Marlon Brando movies. And I was like, oh, I'd love. So I would just get on the lens, get on the camera every day. And I even have this 6-week intensive because people ask me, oh, how'd you get good at your self-tapes? I'm like, I give exercises every single day that you can do. The first one is like, just tell a story from your life, a pivotal moment in your life to the camera. Just tell that. Now layer in the words of any script. I don't care what the script is. It's one page, please. It's like, and some people that do it, in 6 weeks, their self-tapes are through the, they're all bookable. 80%, I don't want to say 90, 80% will start doing it, and then fade off about week two or three, and then not do that. I can see the progress I can see who made progress and who didn't. Yeah. And they stop calling me for follow-ups, and they stop. I'm like, It's that you got to go through the, and this is what I learned from not making it in hockey, from that day mm-hmm. that I felt like my guts were ripped out, that I didn't make it as a pro, an NHL hockey player. is I don't want to have that regret. So when I feel miserable and I don't feel like going down into my garage and taping one, I'm like, you know what? Use that to fuel you and use that in this tape. Use something, find something cool. And then I'll find this little creative juice. I'm like, wow. Now it's like painting. It's like going to my garage and painting. I'm like, all of a sudden, just the art of doing it, you start to find really cool, cool creative pockets.
I mean, I'm dealing with this with my 11-year-old. He was getting really discouraged because, like, he wasn't doing as well in math, and but he also wasn't working hard. And yeah. I was like, I'm good at math. I go, yeah. How about, Charlie, you just let me tutor you every day for a few weeks. Mm-hmm. You know, just let me help you with your homework. Mm-hmm. And now he's getting 100% on his tests. Yeah. And it's very rewarding.
Yeah.
And he's like, oh, this is solvable.
Yeah.
And he would come up with all these bullshit excuses of, maybe I just don't like math, Dad. Yeah. I'm like, no, no. You don't like feeling that you're not doing well.
Yeah.
I think it's about people's relationship to the not doing well.
Yes.
Instead of getting discouraged by it, you got to get interested in it.
Yes, you're 100% right. Because now I put in this module one of this course, because sometimes people can take it online. Module one now of this course is don't think of it as a self-tape anymore. Think of it as you're shooting your coverage, doing a short film in your garage that night. And take the thought of getting the job out, and it makes people more excited to go down and tape. I'm like, give yourself the freedom from camera on to camera off. It's your character. Take complete ownership. And I think it gives people more, because now the rate, my people, it's going up. Because I think when people think they have to go and do something to get a job or to have an outcome, you see kind of frozen, locked off, tight, or just kind of like non-interesting choices or a human being there. As where when someone's given ultimate freedom, do whatever you want. Because, you know, for me, I have to pretend, just like with hockey, there's two ways to go about it. Some actors like when they have to pretend that there's no chance they're ever getting this, so why not do it the way you want? Do it any way you want, because you're not going to get this. I can't do that, because it's a defeating one. It works with some actors. Mine is the opposite. I go, just like with hockey, on all the teams I ever made, I'm like, I don't want to be one of these people that cries about politics. Oh, it's this industry's against me, or this or that. There's less TV shows. There's still 450 TV shows. So I don't understand this. Like there was only in 2010, there was only like 200 TV shows. So there's still way more. So I don't want to have excuses. No one's going to save you. So I like to pretend that, I have to beat out the best person for this job. So the only way I'm going to do that is to bring my maximum creativity, my maximum underbelly, and tell a story unique to me that maybe I've gone through. Now, I know some people work differently. I just work like unique to me underneath these words that only I can tell. And if I rewatch that tape and it seems generic, I'm like, I didn't do my job. I didn't paint an original.
Okay.
So that's how just I have to keep the fun in it, is I have to create an original.
How's it working with your wife and trying?
She would love to be in this right now. When we both see stuff and we kind of are in alignment, it's great. Like she just shot SWAT last week because it was like three takes. We're like, oh, we get this. But then when we don't see things, you know, the same way, we just work slightly different. We work slightly different. So I have to just, it's hard. I think when you have a significant other, you know so much truth about them that you start to analyze rather than support. You know, you start to go, I think you're too hypercritical of your significant other. So, you know, and I also think you get a little self-conscious about totally being, you know, another person in front of the person that just told you to take the garbage out an hour ago. You know, so I think it's hard when you're in that kind of relationship to then separate that and then be in a total play, freedom, relaxation, mental state with the same person again who just said to take the garbage out.
When I was acting, I would run stuff with my wife, and the one thing, I mean, she's not a good actor. She never has been, nor would she profess. I mean, But she was great to run stuff with because she was a great bullshit detector.
Yeah.
She would
just look
at me and go, mm-mm.
Yeah, yeah.
And
yeah.
I go, what? She said, mm-mm.
Yeah, yeah.
She could just tell what was authentic and not authentic.
Yes, exactly.
And I was like, you're right. That's not authentic. Yeah. I go, I don't know it yet, but I will. Just
the only problem with that is that you don't feel the freedom to take chances.
Right.
Because then it's like, it's going to be a no, but that might have been the one pocket. See, I know there's people out there that say only do three takes, only do two takes. I like to dive. I mean, I have fun with it. Right. So I like, but I do see what people are saying. I see what they mean by that is because some actors then will try to get it right and then they crush all.
Well, I have to say, I have one actor, Chloe Wepper, you know, she's a teacher, so she's so good.
Yeah.
But what I've learned with her is that often she'll come to me for coaching and her first take is almost every time the thing we use.
Yes, that's great.
But she's done a lot of prep to get that.
Yes, yes.
And
yes,
after
yes,
the first take, we can't play. But when I go back and watch them, I was like, the first take is the most embodied, the most invested. Mm-hmm. She's like, it's that's where all the nuance is.
Yeah.
And the second take, it's, you know, because we're maybe like there's one moment we were like, we could play with another direction there. But it ends up being it ends up being that. So everyone is so absolutely different. But I have a question regarding your – because, look, you – you do tape people and you have your group of people that you work with. What would you say is for those people who fall off?
Mm-hmm.
Do you find that there's a pattern of thinking with those people? What is that pattern of thinking?
It's the same, what we're talking about with sports, with the pattern of thinking is like, I even have people who book and their pattern of thinking is I'm never going to work again. Or why am I doing this? Or they minimize what they book.
Mm-hmm.
Like I have one, but then you have the contrary. Like it's some people can turn it around because I have this one girl. She never booked TV before, and now she's been working with me for 2 months. She was always good, but for two and a half months, she booked NCIS Hawaii, and now she's on Monster.
Yeah.
But she was always good. I just think now she's letting herself carve moments out a little bit more and letting herself having a good relationship with the camera.
Yeah.
The people that fall off, I think they feel like, because you can also tell in their tapes, they won't move past that one spot. They're in this one spot. They don't get closer to the camera. They don't get further away. Their inflection's kind of all the same. They do an actor version of laughing, an actor version of sad, an actor. So it's like, and then they go into the line or it's like, you know, I thought she was here. And it's like, nothing's really, I try to go to hundreds. This is why I say people work different. My first couple takes, I do the fuck it takes. I do the takes where I'm like, I don't care. I want to wherever my impulse leads me, I'm going to go and I'm going to follow that. If I'm going to laugh, maybe I'll laugh like the Joker. If I'm going to cry, maybe I'll really sit down and have a moment. And I'm like, I'm trying to find like really cool like worlds that I live in.
You have to fail to find.
Yes, yeah, yeah.
You have to fail to find. And the more you fail to find, listen, this may not be what you use, but you're finding something that you want to explore, that you want to investigate.
Mm-hmm.
I love sitting down with you.
Yeah, it's awesome.
I really love sitting down with you. Your energy, we both work really hard.
Yeah.
But like you do it with a – you are – there is the – I don't know. There's something you're invigorating. It feels like you do everything with an energy, and it feels like it's also fueled. I like that. It's also like fear. There's like if you have like I don't want to fucking I will not fail
100%. And it all comes back to that 19-year-old kid who felt like the biggest breakup of his life because all I knew to that point was hockey. Literally, I swear. I even thought I went to Morristown Beard, this top prep school in New Jersey. Best hockey school in New Jersey, except for Del Barton, but we beat him a little. But anyway, and I remember sitting in senior lounge and being like in this, and I was like, I don't need to go to class because, you know, it's all about hockey. So I would rest for my games.
Yeah.
And I kind of pissed away school. I kind of pissed away because I was all about the NHL. I was all about, and then when that got taken away, I'm like, I am not letting that happen again.
Yeah.
No, and I work. I grind it out because I have to book to feed my family. Yeah. So it's not like I got on a show and I've been on a show recurring for 6 years. Yeah. Every year I have to start all over again and book at least 10 jobs to make, you know, enough to feed, you know, between commercials and TV and movies and stuff.
Yeah. there's not a lot of weeks off.
Yeah, there's not a lot of
there's
weeks.
Not a lot of weeks
no,
off.
No,
and God, I know. And, I mean, I only have one, but I'm always thinking about college education.
Yeah,
you know, what are you doing?
Yeah,
we gotta.
Yeah,
you know,
we're thinking bigger house now, and it's like bigger house. More, I gotta make more money. It's like, and I've been booking some great shows. Apple TV, High Desert, the one coming out, the Big Cigar, Don Cheadle series coming out about the Black Panthers. Great roles, great shows. I was at Columbia for 2 months shooting that.
Damn.
Great stuff. But they're two episodes here, three episodes. It's like, but I know my craft is getting really good because I'm playing so many different characters. From I'm on Ghost in New York, that Power Book Ghost, where I'm like this, like a stockbroker. And then I go and I'm playing like this Vietnam War vet in the 1970s that lives in a jungle with in the Don Cheadle series. And then I'm playing this tanning salon owner who lives in Barstow in High Desert. So it's like I got all these different characters that I got to explore.
And you also, God, you were working so much. I'm so happy for you. But then also you're helping actors with their self-tapes,
yep.
You know, and you you even offer some of what we offer of like helping people with reps.
Oh, I'm the best at that. I know. I mean, I would collaborate.
We're all good.
Yeah. The best at the. But it's work again. It goes to work. So. I'm the best at taking someone where they're at, and within 6 months to a year, getting them with the perfect fit rep.
Right.
Some people will get them with any rep. Because I'm a numbers guy. I'm like. Who is effective right now? Who didn't? Where you have to add value.
Right.
So if the actor doesn't add value, I don't care what rep signed you. It's not going to work.
Right.
You have to add value. That's the thing that they don't understand is, I have a list of 7,000 reps. You could sandblast and somebody will sign you, but it doesn't mean anything. It's got to be where you add value, and self-tapes rule the world right now. Rule this entertainment actor world, self-tapes. Because I get people signed 100% of the time, they'll say, send me two recent self-tapes. Even if they're real stacked, send me two recent self-tapes.
Good.
Because they now know what stacks up against their other clients.
You, in order to arrive where you've arrived here today, you truly had to impose yourself on LA, which used to be like, well, you know so many people. You and your wife know everybody.
Yeah.
You know, you are out there meeting people.
Yeah.
That also sounds like where you try to get your friends and some of your clients to do, where you're saying you can't, but you have to do it with precision and you have to do it also with a lot of generosity and investment and curiosity.
Mutuality. Like,
mutuality.
Like Billy Zane sent me to, you know, my first, he sent me to Paradigm when I was, before I even knew how to act, this is probably what I meant. But I mean, like, I'm like, that's really generous of a person. He sent me to Andrew Ruff at Paradigm. And he's like, he'll send you in on a few things. Like, I'm like, oh, that's the kind of person I want to be. I want to be someone, like a producer, or like someone who helps lift people up. And like, there's so much negativity, especially on that Instagram, those apps, like everyone ripping apart the other Instagram person. And like, you know, there's people on there tearing down every system. It's like, look, that system might work for somebody. Maybe somebody wants to believe that system works to feel better about themselves. I'm not about tearing anybody down. I think we should build everyone up from where they're at and help them add value. Now, maybe that rep is a co-star, you know, someone who's great at getting people co-stars. Maybe this person's dream is to do a co-star. That's fine. Like, just find the right matchmaker. Right, find the right match.
Matchmaker. I love that.
Yeah.
All right, we're going to wrap up here. Scene.
It was awesome. So much fun.
So much fun.
Yeah.
We'll do it again in a couple of years.
Yeah.
This is already a good year for you.
Yeah. It's just one step, one foot in front of the other.
All right.
Yeah.
Thanks for doing this.
Yeah, you're awesome.
Hashtag Act Your Life is a John Rosenfeld Studios podcast, produced by Pave Path Productions, filmed by Haley Tucker, sound engineering by Haley and Adam Tucker, sound mixing and original music by Brandon Liu and Brandon Liu Music. To learn more about John Rosenfeld Studios, visit www.johnrosenfeld.com.